It's hard to find a culture, religion, society, or time in history when humans haven't held the fear of total extinction in their hands, defined events as signs of prophecies, and try to predict the inevitable path fate would walk before finally their faith would turn into the truth of fire and bring the world to its knees. Some call it doomsday, the apocalypse, Armageddon, the second coming, the rapture, the end of days, the last Toyotathon, while others see the four horsemen approaching as they doom scroll social media, catching highlights of their fears in the headlines of clickbait. Hashtags tweet the trending sounds of seven trumpets as the faithful watch the tick tock of the doomsday clock approach the dawn of 10,000 suns flashing at midnight before the long nuclear winter. But now, as it has always been, influencers preach their sermons and pass the collection plate through promo codes. Refuge from the coming nightmare is on sale between Instagram reels, tactical flashlights, tactical strollers, tactical gold bars, vouched for by the enlightened community of your Facebook congregation. This week, we're covering a combination of catastrophes, some based in science, others faith, but all are born from the truth of a fear that's always been wrong. Join us as we laugh at the end of history and kick off season two of The Black Cat Report with the apocalypse, cults, catastrophes, and con artists. I didn't see you there.
Something big is going on here.
From hunting ghosts to Bigfoot,
paranormal, UFOs, true crime, and more.
We won't just be spouting articles.
I was researching for your entertainment.
The beginning of a new world.
The best guac you'll ever fucking eat.
True story.
It's basically like one day you walk outside and you see that the ants are playing with matches.
This is the Black Cat Report. See you on the other side.
Before we get into it, I'm going to give you the secret recipe behind baking up a good apocalypse. You see, when you start looking into the display case at the Armageddon ice cream shop, you'll find there's really only three main flavors: vanilla, strawberry, and chocolate. And every single prophet or prophecy pretty much uses these to match to people's tastes, their tastes in fear. It is a Neapolitan of doom.
Wow.
Trust me, this metaphor does go somewhere, but there's a purpose, all right? So what are they and why? So first we have natural extinction, with examples like supervolcanoes, floods, asteroids, shifts in the Earth's polarity, and plagues. They're natural events and processes that we're the victims of, but would still happen without anyone around. It's the vanilla of doom. And just like vanilla, nature is almost always used as the base to make the other more exciting flavors of end times possible. Next to that would be strawberry. Anthropogenic risks, right? So these are human-caused conclusions to human history. While you still use vanilla, nature, as the kill shot on civilization, the strawberry flavoring is made up of our bloodshed and ignorance. Things like nuclear war, artificial intelligence taking over, climate change, biological weapons, etc. All require human manipulation to build, bomb, or biff the natural world. And finally, we have chocolate. Human faith and belief are prophecies and predictions. This tastes like the Antichrist, the Ascension, the second coming of a Messiah, a final battle, God's will over decisions and fate. While there's still a lot of nature wrapped up in these cataclysms, they wouldn't happen or exist if basically some humans weren't humaning better than others, or if we weren't the prized trophy of a WWF spiritual smackdown between the forces of good and evil.
Brother.
Now,
you, brother.
So, with that kind of loose metaphor there, well, for one thing, the chicken cult one of our listeners started with the kids he's leading at summer camp needs to have more than an idol. It needs a philosophy of impending doom to really keep them in line and committed. And ice cream flavor metaphors are just a way better option than trying to go through a bunch of really boring textbook definitions of extinction scenario categories. Trust me, I read way the hell too many pages to bring you that Neapolitan. So I hope you enjoy. For our first apocalypse, we will be highlighting a little known but sticky miscalculation that still gets used as a scientific argument in YouTube videos to this day. I literally found videos referencing this from today. And that is the Jupiter effect. A book published in 1972 and written by John Gribben and Stephen, I think it's literally pronounced Plague Man. Both Cambridge educated astrophysicists with multiple degrees in astronomy and way too long of a list of credentials to highlight. But basically, these two men were at the top of their fields in science. And so after spending years charting and mapping the angles and timing of planetary orbits around our solar system, they eventually arrived on a single date and a very terrifying conclusion. On March 10th, 1982, Earth would be positioned on the opposite side of every other planet when they aligned perfectly behind the sun. Why is that bad? Well, the effects of this alignment would, in a sense, create a concentrated gravitational death ray pointed straight at Earth.
Wow.
Yeah.
All well, right, the
this is nuts, right? So the overwhelming pull of the aligned planet's gravity would basically warp the oceans of flames on the sun, kind of like the moon moves the tides on Earth. This would basically then lead to a push and pull that would trigger massive sunspots, which would cause high-speed particles to be picked up by intense and agitated solar winds and be blasted straight towards Earth, ultimately speeding up the Earth's rotation.
We actually read a book about that.
Dude.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What was the name of the book, Joey?
Age of Miracles.
Age of Miracles.
But it was slowing down.
We highly recommend that book. Oh, yeah, it was slowing down. But highly recommend that book, Age of Miracles.
If we
it's
go
great.
Too fast, we're all just going to fly off.
That might be one of the books that was influenced by this theory.
I was just going to say, we're all going to fly off the face of the Earth.
I'm okay with that.
Shorter work days.
Just fly off.
I'm ready for the apocalypse. Bring it on.
Well, I would imagine if the Earth's rotation sped up, gravity would also get heavier. So you would start feeling a lot more gravity.
Pancakes.
So you'd get heavier.
Oh, our bodies would crush.
Depending on how fast it got.
Our leg bones would come through our shoulders.
Yeah, so all this comes down to our planet would basically get sucker punched and there was nothing we could do to stop it. And to make the coming catastrophe worse, the combination and timing of the initial impact would focus directly on the San Andreas fault line and trigger an overwhelming earthquake that would completely level Los Angeles.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. This is like some heavy shit for some of the world's like foremost super scientist people that do their job to like be like, hey guys, kind of found something over here and like publish that, you know?
That's
a big deal.
And then it turned to April 2nd and they were like, just kidding.
Hey, bro.
You. They're like, it's an Earth rotation joke. You wouldn't get it.
There was
you'll get it. You'll get it sooner
just
next
me
year.
Of the, the earthquake that happened in Northridge in 1994. It was like almost like a 7, like a whatever, a number 7 on the scale. And like, yeah. And it like destroyed a ton of stuff. But like that's not even like to the extent that they're saying this like earthquake is going to be, that's going to end the earth. And that was like a devastating thing that people still talk about today. So I was just like, for comparison.
Yeah. Well, as the date grew closer, more and more people around LA began hearing about the Jupiter effect. And while some dismissed it, others couldn't help but feel a subtle but growing anxiety building with each passing day. Before long, the believers began reaching their breaking point, eventually leading to large numbers of people choosing to sell their homes, quit their jobs, and move out of the city.
Yikes.
They basically trusted their fears with the academic credentials of these prophets and were trying their best to get as far away as they could from ground zero.
Jeez.
This is like a 10-year like heads up on shit, and this book became a bestseller. So like, of course, it already became a bestseller. There's copies everywhere. And then, like, the date starts getting closer. So, like, it becomes more relevant. Like, I remember my parents talking to me when I was, like, I don't remember how young, about, like, you know, December 21st, like 2000 or like 2012, like the Mayan calendar. It was like 5, 6, 7 years before that shit started popping up on TV, and I was just like, I'm done with that doomsday.
Yeah.
Like, that was, yeah,
would it be crazy?
Yeah, you can't just get over it.
Yeah,
yeah,
it would be really crazy. Yeah. As if that it was a plan by people, by like real estate developers and home flippers that got those guys, or they bought the houses themselves and then resold them and became millionaires.
They already do it's that. Like, so wait, yes.
Wait, who's the public Remax? Remax Publishing.
Remax Publishing.
Damn it. But then something strange happened, right? Not in the history of profits, but in this timeline. In July of 1980, one of the authors of the book, John Gribben, suddenly began to distance himself from his frightened readers. Okay, this is 2 years before shit's supposed to go down. He began downplaying the book's predictions, his research, the effects of the alignment, all of that. Started to get a little nervous, a little squirrely, right? Like, I mean, then again, he is, you know, an astronomer. He's used to just being in the dark, nobody actually seeing him. And now all these people are like, what do you think is going to happen tomorrow? You know, he's just like, oh, what the fuck, dude? Get away from me. You know,
he got a message.
I'm like, I live in New England. I'm not scared, dumbass. Get away.
He got a message from his friend saying, pi is actually 3.14, not 3.11. And he's like, oh.
I thought it was 3140. how the fuck did I graduate? Well, yeah, so start downplaying, start being like, no, maybe it's not that bad, this and that and the other. And in February of 1982, just 1 month before the predicted doomsday, John Gribben and Stephen Plagueman released a new book, The Jupiter Effect Reconsidered. In it, they confidently declared not to worry about March 10th, 1982, because the Jupiter effect had already happened in 1980 when Mount St. Helens blew up.
Obviously.
I love the retcon. I love that they retconned themselves, you know?
What's that?
They just went back and were like, oh, no, it already happened. Retconning.
Oh.
Yeah, like you're rewriting. Yeah. After it happened, they're like, oh yeah, see, I told you.
That phrase,
I told you it happened. Yeah, it already happened.
They just like gaslit their followers, which I think honestly might be the most humane way to like break apart a cult. Mm-hmm. It's to just like it's to gaslight them and be like, hey everybody, guess what? We don't have to kill each other, kill ourselves. They're saved. And they're like, yay! Yeah, I was saved like 3 weeks ago. They just wanted to see if we would go to do it. Now that we were almost going to do it, we're all free. Yay!
Yeah, like in the Bible when God said to kill the guy's son and then he was going to do it and then God was like, never mind, just wanted to see if you would do it.
Just kidding.
Yeah. Like, wow, you were actually going to do it? Okay.
He's like, dude, I'm just doing what you did to your son. Oh,
dang.
Shit, sorry.
Too soon.
Don't get too soon.
Jesus Christ.
Well, I think the important thing to keep in mind, I know somebody fucking Jesus Christ. But with all that in mind, it's important to keep in mind that just because your doomsday is based in science doesn't mean the calculations are prophetic.
What? Right? Science is always right, though.
This guy was a scientist.
Not if the calculations are wrong.
But right? Science never lies.
Science do be changing.
Yeah. And that's kind of the point of why I wanted to share that little snippet. It's not the craziest, longest story in the world, but like it does point out something that's entirely science-driven. Right? And it's entirely like natural. It's a scientific observation where like a scientist who probably had no idea that they were going to like become some status in the world and like popular from this book. Like, who the fuck reads these little books, you know? And then it becomes a giant bestseller, and all of a sudden, like, everybody's talking about doomsday and they're like asking him advice. And he's just like, oh shit, You're not a calculator. I don't know what to do.
I wonder if there was other books written or other research papers written against that with different math.
There were.
So just adding in there, like, people, obviously a lot of people read the first story, but never read the retconning of it or read them actually talking about, like, other people going back towards it and being like, hey, this is actually not true. Look at the math. It's incorrect. I redid it. Instead of that guy being, you know, he's the only story. Like, people don't really go back and read retractions and papers when they make mistakes.
The Nibiru Cataclysm was something that started up way, way, way back in the 90s. Nobody remembers that. Nobody's old enough here to remember that. And it was formed or was proposed by this lady from Wisconsin, Nancy Leader, right? She did it on a website called, where is it? Zeta Talk. Okay. She's convinced that she receives and has conversations with the Zeta Reticulans.
Oh, right? My God.
And this is, I don't know. I don't have anything written up for this section. I'm just going to be honest here. This Nibiru is basically like, how do I put this? It's just the herpes of apocalypse stories. Okay. Like, basically, it'll follow you to the end of the days, and at least 67% of every doomsday prediction has it somewhere in it. Like, it's just constantly popping up everywhere. There's podcasts that are just dedicated to Nibiru, right? And I think that they're able to make multiple seasons because they're literally just been making shit up about it for so fucking long. At one point, I literally saw... So this is basically a giant-ass planet that's supposed to be just kind of like just a little bit out of our way so we can't see it at any point in time. But then a lot of the followers constantly feel and try to take a video of basically the sun in the sky behind some clouds.
Okay.
And say, that's not the sun. That must be Nibiru. And I'm going to tell you, after we all watch a video, the link will be in the show notes. I highly encourage you to go watch it. But trust me, the audio was good enough. I felt comfortable just playing it on here. I'll tell you the stats on that video after just 2 weeks. And I think the number of people that comment, like, and keep up with this shit might scare you more than the absurdity of there's a giant planet, like, trying to play peekaboo with us. Okay. And one of the main fears, other than maybe it's a celestial, a hidden celestial body from another dimension, or it's a planet the size of Earth that's going to head into Earth and crash and obviously destroy us, or it's a spaceship, or it's run by the government, which is why they deny it. Like, it literally just keeps going, and you can go back, go look up Nibiru sighting, right? Just go to YouTube, look that up, and just start scrolling of, like, the Nibiru impact, and it's, like, 2011, and it's, like, any week now! It's, like, 2008, any week now! Like, 2023, June, any week now! And it's, like,
oh my
go
God.
There, and it's this, and it's different people posting this, right? And I'm just, like, how is this happening? So, yeah. Well, for our next one, and I really, really, really try to avoid the milquetoast, the boilerplate, the average doomsday and apocalypse scenarios that we all know, right? So the second coming of Christ and, like, the birth of the Antichrist and all that shit like that. Really tried to avoid that. We all know them. We all love them, all right? We've all seen the movies. But I came across one case does point to the second coming that was just too good not to include. And I really hope that you enjoy it as much as I do. This is the case of the Doomsday Prophet, kind of. Mary Bateman.
Mm-hmm.
Mary Bateman had an interesting and somewhat problematic life, but who doesn't? Growing up in England in the late 1700s. Well, we're going to skip ahead a little bit because there's a lot of boring time period there and get to the part where she's about 21 years old and she's living in Leeds, England, where, amongst other things, She was working hard to develop a solid reputation as a fortune teller and a wise woman. Unfortunately, the constables in the area didn't much care for her kind. And no matter what she did, she just kept getting hassled by the police for the smallest little thing. By 21 years old, she was living in Leeds, England, where, amongst other things, she was working hard to develop a solid reputation as a fortune teller and a wise woman. But unfortunately, the constables didn't much care for her kind. And no matter what she did, she just kept getting hassled by the police for the littlest things. Petty crimes and infractions like burglary, robberies, multiple failed and successful prison escapes, and bribery. Her minor faults aside, Mary was an incredibly active and dedicated member of the Leeds community. At one point, after a massive fire had affected many of the local residents, she personally went out, going door to door, begging anyone and everyone she could to offer up donations, to bring in donations to help those who had just lost everything. And in short time, she had amassed a large amount of money, food, and supplies for the people affected by this terrible fire.
Well, look at that.
But sadly, she must have used the same shipping company the U.S. did back in 2010 when Haiti was rocked by a terrible earthquake and somehow billions of dollars went missing.
Mm, very convenient.
Skipping ahead.
She was the GoFundMe.
Yeah.
So fast forwarding now to 1806. So around 1806, Bateman joined the followers of the prophetess, a Christian prophet, Joanna Southcott. And soon after, a miracle took place. One day, Bateman's hen laid an egg. And this egg happened to have a very important message on it. Christ is coming.
Yay!
Finally.
I'm ready. I'm ready for Jesus.
Now, over and over again, reliably, this hen would lay an egg that literally said on it, Christ is coming. It kept going, and it went on for just so long that eventually she started charging people one penny to let them in so that they could watch this hen lay an egg. Like, literally,
wow,
watch
that's
the hen
so
lay an egg.
Weird.
Which said Christ is coming on it. But then, just like the rest of her life, sadly, one day this hen was taken and it just suddenly stopped laying any more prophecies. Some say because it was the hen's lost connection to Mary, who had a connection to Christ. Others say it was discovered later that Mary had been writing Christ is coming on eggs and then physically putting them back in the prophetic hen. God. Sadly, yep. We may never know the truth.
Well, that keeps it mysterious.
It's true. It's true. But luckily, Mary was able to bounce back. She was able to stay strong after the loss of Prophet Hen, and within months was employed by a couple, William and Rebecca. William and Rebecca Pierogi.
Yeah.
You see, Rebecca was having chest pains, and Mary was the only one skilled enough to know what was causing them, a curse. And for the next 2 years, Mary worked tirelessly to save Rebecca by selling the couple charms and cures and regularly feeding them both poison pudding that the police eventually found and matched in her apartment when they raided it after Rebecca died.
Oh my gosh.
She's one of the greatest prophets of all time. She only had that brief moment, but I just love that story. I don't know.
Yeah, it's pretty funny because the husband didn't die because he actually didn't like the pudding, so he stopped eating it after a while. So like I think it had to be some kind of like lead that slowly killed them or something like that that wasn't going to kill you
Mercury
right away.
Would.
That just like slowly killed you. Could be.
Yeah, because then, like, what? He disappears and leaves, and that's it.
Did they know that mercury was poisonous at that time period, though? Because I feel like half the shit that they were eating and using was killing them, but they didn't know it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
What's funny is that
Mary knew.
What's funny is that Mary was actually in a prophetic apocalyptic cult as she was trying to give her own prophet thing. So Joanna Southscott was originally hearing voices that predicted future events, saying that the crop failures and famines of like 1799 to 800 would come. And she published her own books and had like over 100,000 people that follow her. And in 1813, she said that she would give birth to the second coming of Christ, the second Messiah, and it would signal the last days of earth. But she was 64 years old,
mm-hmm.
and she was a virgin.
Nerd.
So many people think.
Well,
that,
she said she was a virgin, but she
well,
also died.
Is she in
Tulum?
Because if she's in Tulum, that makes sense. Everyone in Tulum thinks they're gonna give birth to Jesus.
That makes sense. I don't know why, but it makes as much sense as Jesus.
All right, our next one is a wild one. Although UFOs and non-human entities are more commonly accepted as a possible reality nowadays, this was not quite the case when this doomsday cult first formed in 1953. Known as the first ever UFO cult, this hive mind was formed when a University of Michigan professor named Charles Lougheed met a woman named Dorothy Martin. Now, Dorothy's father had recently passed, and she had been making attempts to contact him. She soon claimed she had made contact with something else. She had made a telepathic connection with extraterrestrial beings she called the Guardians. She had a few friends that would gather at her house to listen to these otherworldly messages. This is what got Lougheed intrigued. He introduced her to a small non-denominational church, which already had a bias towards the paranormal and spirituality. They called themselves the Seekers.
Seekers.
First ever UFO cult. What do you guys think about that?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's great.
Isn't that wild?
That's pretty awesome. I
mean,
in the
1950s.
That was less than 10 years after Roswell and Trinity. And they're just like, hey,
we ready
to go.
All right. Dorothy quickly became a figurehead and relayed her messages to the group. The Guardians had warned her that the apocalypse was coming on December 21st, 1954. There would be terrible
winter solstice.
There would be terrible earthquakes and floods that would destroy the earth. But boy, did they have luck on their side. Because of the being's connection with Dorothy, the Guardians would be coming to pick them up on a UFO to save them from the impending destruction of the planet. Woo! Dodged a bullet.
They're so nice. Fuck yeah, Dorothy.
To prepare for this, some people did go to such extremes as to quit their jobs. They took it very seriously.
Oh my god.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, the hell.
Like, people were dropping out of like school, like quitting their jobs, fucking like all sorts of shit.
Well, the hilarious thing was that the day came and went. Being confronted by the perception of reality not coinciding with the events of that day, some left. But most stayed. You see, it wasn't that they were wrong, per se. The end of days was actually going to be on December 24th. What about that doesn't make sense?
I forgot. Their calendar's a few days, like, behind, and, like, da-da-da-da-da. So, like, they said 20, but I didn't change for the time zones. And she does that all the time.
Oh,
that's a normal thing. You know what I'm saying? Like, we all do it.
Whoopsie doodles.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's the logistics of it.
All right. New doomsday, December 24th. The Seekers were so sure that this was going to happen that they invited the entire town to come and be saved by the aliens. Dorothy got a message that they were to wait outside and sing Christmas carols until their ride showed up. So this group, surrounded by townsfolk just watching, began to nervously sing.
And, like, there are photos of them going up to it. There was, like, 200 people that showed up for this. Like, they were surrounded by a mob of folks. This, like, small group of, like, UFO cultists. And just, like, really, really nervously, frantically caroling.
Yeah.
They were fucking singing Christmas carols in a circle surrounded by hundreds of people waiting for a UFO.
All right.
I'd pay to see it's, that.
Right?
Yeah. I there wish is nothing I could have seen that.
Okay.
That shows you how much there is to do in the Midwest. There's literally nothing to do.
They're like, hey, well, these doomsday folk here are putting on a show.
Yeah, I talked to one of them earlier. Ding! Motherfuckers think that's the sun.
All right. Once again, the world did not end, and their Uber never showed. I wish I could say this was the end of this cult. But while most said, actually, fuck this, and left, the few who stayed, again, being confronted by their reality not matching the reality of the world, could not accept they were wrong. Instead, to ease the discomfort of their beliefs being incongruent to reality, the new message was that they had actually saved the planet somehow.
We did it!
That's
we did it!
Wait. The planet was in danger?
Yeah.
Yeah, the floods and the earthquakes and the bleh.
Oh, so they were going to get pulled up to save them from the planet's destruction.
Yes, but somehow their caroling stopped whatever force was going to flood and break apart the planet. I think, like, wasn't it, did you get into that? Wasn't there a belief that, like, the entirety of the continent of the United States would, like, collapse into the ocean and, like, basically form a new ocean or some shit? It was going to get real wild. That's what I'm trying to say.
I read that they were saying there were going to be, like, cataclysmic earthquakes and floods. You see, the Seekers had managed to get infiltrated by an undercover psychologist. Leon Festinger made his way into the group as a new member. Little did they know, he was actually studying them. I kind of imagine it as, like, him standing in the corner. Groups huddled together around Dorothy and they're like, yeah, tell us more. And she's like, okay, yeah. So anyway, the Guardians were like, and then she looks over and she's like, who's that? And they're like, oh, that's just a head. And he's just like peeking out from behind a lamp.
Stenographer.
Yeah, he's got the lampshade on his head.
He's like, don't mind me. I'm just here to be picked up by the UFO.
My other one, my foil one, is on the way right now, so I had to use a borrower, you know. But yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
When he caught wind that this group of people believed that the world would be ending, and that they would be taken away in a UFO, he knew he had to be there to document and study their behavior when the prediction and belief did not come true. The study of this doomsday cult was the birth of one of Festinger's most famous theories, the theory of cognitive dissonance.
This is literally
the birth of cognitive dissonance.
When that entire theory was built, was on the first UFO cult.
All right, so what is cognitive dissonance? Cognitive dissonance is the uneasiness that you feel when you have conflicting beliefs. An example would be, let's say if a UFO cult believed the end of the world was coming on December 21st or something, and then had to believe the reality that the world didn't end when they saw that nothing happened. So much discomfort came from that. They had invested so much into this belief system that they changed the date of the literal end of the world to alleviate that discomfort. This is cognitive dissonance. Even though they were so wrong, a cult was responsible for inspiring one of the most interesting and widely used psychological theories today. Wild.
Well, if you love that, then you're probably going to hate this. This is one of my favorite things that I've come across in so fucking long. And it's very straightforward, but you could just go on and day for days and days and days and really get into the philosophy and the beliefs that develop here. So here's the thing, like when we speak of apocalypse, end times, doomsdays, etc., it's easy to fall into the imagery of complete and total worldwide destruction, right? That's generally what we think of when we think of a doomsday or an apocalypse. But one group started praying to stop all that. And they're my new favorite church. This group took, a little bit of a different approach to forming religion. Instead of trying to use science to prove religion, they decided to build their religion around science. And they did this with one simple goal in mind: to save nature. And so what's their conclusion? Kill yourself, eat your friends, and save the planet. They are the Church of Euthanasia.
And it's not in that order either.
Sorry.
It's not in that order?
What kind of name is that?
You can't kill yourself, then eat other people.
Well, these are options. Okay.
General guidelines.
Yep. This is why you need to go to church.
Yes.
And they and they have a nuanced set of values, spiced with all sorts of self-loathing religious philosophy that I can only describe as basically elevator music for extinction. Founded in Boston in 1992, the Church of Euthanasia, or COE, practice a modern-day anti-natalist philosophy, which basically means they are super, super against having kids. But it doesn't just stop with childbirth. They formed, their set of practices around four main pillars. And they added in these little asterisk additions to them. So, number one, suicide, optional but encouraged. Number two, abortion, may be required to avoid procreation. Number three, cannibalism, mandatory if you insist on eating flesh, but only if someone is already dead. And number four, sodomy, any sexual act not intended for procreation.
Ew.
Their main goal behind this, right? So they were inspired by the Dadaist like art and cultural movement from back in the day, which is all based around just complete and utter like the chaos of absurdity in order to encourage folks to basically change their ways and change their actions. And so just being so out like that and saying things like that, I think they actually do practice not having kids. But B, they're trying to point out that like humans are destroying the fucking planet. And frankly, we should all fucking die. Like that is they are the only church, and they advertise it that wants all of their members to kill themselves. Not a cult, not a group activity, but like if they're comfortable with it, you just fucking off yourself. Like, I don't know.
All right.
It's just,
all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's something about that as an apocalypse or like an Armageddon that's just like so fucking fascinating to me, right? So it's not a in your face, and it's not like, you know, fire and brimstone and UFOs with fire and brimstone. It's not like that. It's just literally like being like a Jehovah's Witness and like going door to door and being like, hey, have you thought about suicide or eating your friend who's already dead? Or
are you my psychiatrist? Get out of here. I told you never to come back here.
But to play out their beliefs to the actual end, it would mean that there would be one person left on the planet, right? Like, literally, it's reversing the population of the planet. This is the slowest fucking way into an apocalypse as possible. And they do state multiple times, we do not support or condone genocide or eugenics. Like, they have, it goes farther than that, but they have, like, a strong moral basis for everything. But they're fucking absurd.
This sounds like the libertarians, like, Armageddon, because they're just like, no, we're not telling you what to do, but we're encouraging it.
And not everybody should get together. They're like sliding a knife across the table. No. Yeah. Loading a gun and putting it across.
No.
There you go.
We want cocaine to be legal, but we're not going to tell you what's in it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah, but while their numbers are shrinking and, you know, their daycares are starting to grow a little bit dusty, they need not lose hope in humanity's demise, right? Our final doomsday is the answer to every skeptic snarl and every rational dreamer who looks up. At some point, we've all asked or we've all argued against if there is such a high likelihood of life out there in the stars, why do we feel so alone? And for our last apocalyptic scenario, I introduce to you the largest question and the biggest answer, which is the theory of the great filter. Mm-hmm. The great filter seeks to answer the Fermi paradox, which is simply there's a shit ton of math all saying that there's supposed to be life out here, right? We have all these estimates about like how many more years it could have started over here and could start over here. You know, where's everyone at? Why are we alone? Right? More or less, that's a very, very, very loose breakdown of it. And the great filter is a response to that. It's basically the belief or the theory that there is some moment that takes place as any species, any advanced intelligence, right, proceeds to evolve and progress, that in that timeline, there's a natural stopping point where they destroy themselves before wow. they can achieve the types of distances they would be able to go or need to go in space to make contact with other planets. Right? Like literally there is a great filter. And so there's like, if you look up great filter, which I encourage, I find all the theories that people have around it, like absolutely fascinating. One of them was that Elon Musk is going to save us from it. one that came out this week was that AI is the great filter. And then another article came out that said AI might help us get over and through the great filter. But everybody's choice, basically everybody's ideas are out there because nobody knows what the fuck it is. How would you report back about what? How would you report back about what an intelligence-driven process of destroying itself like is? You would never be able to keep history of it. You would never be able to document it.
Thank you for listening to the episode 52 and a half and this minisode on different Armageddons. We appreciate you all listening and can't wait to start Cannibal Month off with the bang. Follow us on our Instagram and soon we'll be debuting our new side podcast called Midnight Mass. Follow along with our Instagram for more dates on that. And we'll see you on the other side.